This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Hurricanes Harvey and Irma were devastating for much of the southern U.S. and the Caribbean this summer, causing massive damage to public infrastructure. While not on the same scale, western Wisconsin has continued to experience similar issues due to flash flooding throughout the region, often costing millions of dollars to repair roads, bridges, power lines, and more. Today, we continue our monthly series on regional infrastructure systems with a conversation about how communities pick up the pieces after severe weather hits. Joining us are Keith Butler, Emergency Management Coordinator for La Crosse County, BJ Rockman, Senior Director for Distribution Operations for Xcel Energy, and Melissa Myers, Workforce Engagement Manager from the Wisconsin region of the American Red Cross. Keith, can you start out by talking a little bit about, you know, what were some of the damage that we saw in this most recent flooding event in July to La Crosse County? Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what kind of damage we saw and what was the extent of that?
Well, this was a sudden occurring situation, as have been all of the recent flash flooding events. We knew they were coming. We knew that was going to be significant rain, but it happened in such a violent manner, intense amounts of rain in a short period of time, that the stormwater systems, the natural drainage areas, the creeks and the streams and things simply were not able to handle that incredible amount of runoff. So we saw damages to roadways, the shoulders of roadways, slopes leading to roadways or down from roadways were eroded and broken away. We saw bridges impacted with debris pounding into them, building up over them, and actually roadways in many locations were underwater for a period of time. So there was significant amount of infrastructure damage to roadways and those kind of situations. Culverts, any of the man-made amenities to stormwater control were just destroyed left and right throughout the county.
How did La Crosse County, the damage that we saw, compare to some of the other counties that were affected by this most recent flooding event?
This one, we ended up being slightly higher than some of our neighbors, which had more home and business damages than perhaps we did. But typically, over the last 6-7 years, we've seen these flash flood events. We're about on par with our neighbors. We certainly have more miles of county road that are highly traveled in La Crosse County than there are in some of our more rural neighboring counties. But we're one of the smallest of the counties around here as far as overall mileage. We're about 20 by 20 miles.
And so is everything repaired at this point? You know, kind of where is the county at with repairs?
All of the county roads are back to where they were with some minor damage repairs still pending. Many of the town roads, however, still remain temporary repairs. The permanent repairs have not occurred, and there are some bridges and things that still require some inspections and some other activities. So we're close to being done, but I think we're going to be winding down now for the construction season. We may not see some of these repairs until next year.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what were the overall costs that La Crosse County saw when it came to damage to public infrastructure? And, you know, how is the county maybe paying for those repairs?
Well, it's out of pocket, unfortunately, up front, until we can get some federal aid. There is a Wisconsin state disaster aid program that can come to the help of municipalities with some difficult financial outlays. You have to buy the stuff up front. So the purchase of gravel, you know, to repair roadways, the repairs of guardrail and other things, it can be very, very expensive. Our initial estimate was $4.6 million after tallying almost all of the 18 municipalities in La Crosse County had damages. The amount that was eligible for FEMA assistance was about half of that. So that means locals are going to be shouldering that burden, the cost.
And, you know, where does that money typically come out of? I mean, do many communities kind of have rainy day funds, you know, pardon the pun maybe there, or is it kind of, you know, finding it or borrowing it?
Well, that's a great question because those were things that I've always misunderstood myself. I didn't really quite understand how that works. But at the township level, they actually are prohibited from having pools of money to sort of set aside. Their operating budget for the year has to equal what their tax levy is. They can't just accumulate funds. So for the most part, they're taking these funds out of their normal wear and tear and their anticipated costs, and they've spent them down.
I want to talk more about funding later in the show, but, you know, BJ, I'll turn to you. Did Excel see any damage in maybe this most recent round of flash flooding or in previous flash flooding events we've seen over the last few years? And maybe what kind of were those damages?
Yeah, especially for the July storm, we saw damages that we weren't used to seeing because we don't typically see the flooding that we did this past year. As in most storms, we created an escalated operation event for the storm that was coming, so we were prepared for that, but we weren't prepared for the flooding that occurred. With that flooding, we had a lot of our assets kind of out in those floodwaters, and that delayed the restoration time in many cases because we couldn't get to those assets. So that, too, was something that we weren't used to as well.
Yeah, I wonder if you can talk about maybe some of the dangers and some of the precautions you guys have to take when there is, you know, situations with power lines or other electrical systems and water.
Sure. As you know, electricity and water don't mix very well. So where we've got infrastructure that's down in the flooded regions, and that's typical for even when there's not flood involved, we'll have those lines out and de-energized. So for the most part, the crew members are out there working on the infrastructure. The line is de-energized, but obviously there's some precautions that they have to take to make sure those lines are de-energized. So our guys follow very strict safety rules to make sure that they're grounding those lines to make sure that they stay de-energized, so they're safe to work on. It's pretty rare that we would actually have our crew members working on something hot or energized. And in most of the cases for that July storm, we were working on dead infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and can you walk us through maybe the typical timeline for repairs like that?
Sure. I think for that storm, we probably were 2 days restoration, maybe a day and a half restoration. For that size of storm, that's pretty typical. We ran into some storms last year that they went as long as 3 days. But what we do is we ramp up forces to bring in the people that we think we need for the level of storm. So we try to keep it to being able to get everybody back in service within the 24 hours, but sometimes depending on the type of storm and availability of resources, we may go out to 2 or 3 days. And I think for the storm in July, if I recall correctly, we're probably closer to 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Melissa, can you talk about, you know, from the Red Cross's perspective, what were your guys' response to some of these more recent flash flooding events?
Sure. Well, you know, we talk a lot about, as the other previous two gentlemen have talked about, you know, Southwest Wisconsin, we have to kind of think back to Wisconsin even just this whole summer. We really started out with the Chautauqua tornadoes that were up in Barron County and Russ County. We had another series of tornadoes that went through all of Northeast County, Green Bay, Appleton, Oshkosh. And then we had a flash flooding event that occurred in Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth County, followed a week later with, as we know, here in the Western Wisconsin region, the flooding that occurred in La Crosse, Monroe, Trumbull, Grant County. So we've had a really busy summer. The American Red Cross is really there to deliver our mission. So we're there to prevent and alleviate human suffering. So as these storms are going through, as people are displaced from their home, from flooding, from tornadoes, we're there to immediately set up shelters to make sure that they have a roof over their head, that they have a good meal, that they have a shoulder to cry on, to talk to, and then making sure also that they're starting to think of long-term recovery, which is a hard thing to think of if you're looking at your home that, you know, potentially could still be underwater. What does that look like to get you back to where you were prior to these various events occurring? And so the Red Cross is really there from that immediate response and then really working with individuals throughout that long-term recovery to make sure that they know what the tools that they need to get themselves back to where they were.
Do you guys have a sense of maybe how many people utilized your resources this, you know, over the course of this summer and the many events that you listed?
Right. Well, I can say, you know, hundreds of folks. I mean, you know, throughout these various storms that we've been responding to throughout the summer, you know, we've had shelters open in numerous. We've had shelters this summer open in Barron County, Russ County, Green Bay, Kenosha County, Walworth County, La Crosse County, Monroe Monroe County. The list just kind of goes on and on. And so, you know, it just depends on the type of effect. You know, these gentlemen are talking about sometimes just infrastructure that was damaged. But then when you're getting to the point that it's damaging residential, we're making sure that those folks that you know, their homes were damaged or destroyed, that they did have a place to go.
Well, certainly, Melissa, we received a fair number of cleanup kits. Lots of people were certainly appreciative of that capability.
Right. You know, that's one thing that the Red Cross, it's a great point, is that, you know, it's not just the folks that had to leave their home due to the flooding, like we saw in Arcadia, folks that were immediately evacuated from their homes because that flash flooding, those waters were rising so quickly. Not only did we provide that, but then in that aftermath, you know, the Red Cross is also providing those bulk distribution supplies. So we're providing them with mops, buckets, bleach, gloves, garbage bags, masks. And although those, you know, it's not as widely seen as someone that may be sleeping on a cot, but there's hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of other people that can stay in their residence. But their basements are flooded. And not just where, you know, you keep your Christmas gifts, but where people are sleeping. This is where you're living, where they're having to rip down drywall, get rid of all their furniture, get rid of their flooring. And the Red Cross is also there providing those supplies as needed as well to help those folks start that longer-term recovery.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio and La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the impact of severe weather on public infrastructure and other systems. We're here with Melissa Myers from the Wisconsin region of the American Red Cross, Keith Butler, La Crosse County's Emergency Management Coordinator, and BJ Rockman from Xcel Energy in Eau Claire. Melissa, you're talking about, you know, all the different ways that the American Red Cross is kind of responds to these emergencies we've seen throughout the state. And I wonder if you can talk about, you know, who are the people on the ground helping? Are these, you know, neighbors of people who are kind of seeking out help?
Our major response teams are our Red Cross volunteers. You know, here in the state of Wisconsin, we have, I mean, across the nation, the Red Cross volunteers are just amazing. Here in the state of Wisconsin, they've, you know, like I said, we've had a really busy summer, and it seems like they're responding to so much. And so they are trained American Red Cross volunteers. We do have folks that are living locally, that they've seen their community affected, that they're coming to us and they're saying, how can I help? And those folks are absolutely a part of the team as well. A majority of that workforce, though, are our trained Red Cross responders. And those are the folks that are not only responding to large events such as this flash flooding, but these are our same volunteers that are getting those phone calls at 2 a.m. And responding to single family fires, multifamily fires, which is all still going on during all of these major events that we're talking about. Last night alone, when you think of all the response going on with the hurricanes, we had an 8-unit apartment fire in Green Bay that we provided assistance for 21 people. Last night in Arcadia as well, we had another multifamily fire that, again, the Red Cross was there providing this assistance for them. And those are all those same people, those same trained volunteers that are getting up, whether it's 8 a.m, whether it's noon or it's 3 a.m, they're getting up and they're responding and they're providing that immediate assistance.
Keith, earlier we were talking a little bit about, you know, kind of the financial impact of some of these weather events we've seen. You know, I wonder if you have heard any more word about kind of where we're at with a federal disaster declaration. I know Governor Walker has requested that for the flooding in July, and I wonder if you can kind of give us an update.
Well, that's certainly the question on all of our minds in emergency management communities right now. It's pending. It's all we know right now. Other than the FEMA funds that are typically be available for us rather quickly, have been exhausted. Certainly the hurricanes in Texas and then the follow-ups, the one in Florida and in Puerto Rico now, have taken all the attention and all the available funds. So ours may be delayed for quite some time. We just really know. And because of the structure of that Robert G. Stafford Act from 1986, which authorizes the Federal Emergency Management Agency to provide this kind of funds, it all resides in the lap of one person. Only the President of the United States can authorize the disaster program. So we're pending. We're just kind of waiting to see when we're going to rise back to the top of that pile.
Yeah. You mentioned the hurricanes have kind of been, you know, taking the forefront of this, looking at emergency funds. I mean, is there the possibility that we won't receive a federal disaster declaration because there are is still potential for more hurricanes this season.
Well, not only that, but there are several reasons why our request could be denied or reduced significantly. And that has happened. Wisconsin has submitted requests for aid during a severe winter. A couple of winters ago, we had just huge propane shortages. We had water mains breaking all over the state. It was horrible. It was a very, very expensive situation. Aid was not provided. So we understand that asking for it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get it. So what do we do? How do local communities shoulder that cost, knowing that the aid may not be coming?
I know that when there is a federal disaster declaration, FEMA provides 75% of the costs, and then the remaining is, I believe the state helps cover that remaining as well. You know, what is the situation if there isn't federal money?
Well, you're right that state will divide that remaining 25% share. So the local communities who are eligible applicants only have to pay 12.5% of the total cost, which is an incredible benefit to them. And they're always been appreciative of having that program to them. But when that doesn't happen, there's a small fallback in the Wisconsin State's Disaster Fund. Several million dollars are usually infused into that program each year to help communities who either aren't eligible in the first place for federal aid or don't meet the threshold, or perhaps, in this case, don't get a presidential disaster declaration. So it fills in some of that gap, but it doesn't help everyone.
Mm-hmm. I want to kind of maybe change the avenue of conversation here and talk a little bit about the hurricanes that we have seen so far this summer. You know, Harvey and Irma definitely created massive devastation. And Keith, I wonder, you know, what is the likelihood that we would ever see an event like that, a severe weather event like that, hit our region and affect our region?
Well, every community, of course, is encouraged to conduct an annual review of their hazards and vulnerability assessment. Do that very same thing, to determine what are the worst case scenarios, what are the things we need to prioritize and be ready for, and what are some of the circumstances for it that we may not have to put too much effort into. So for us, volcanoes, coastal storms, tsunamis, hurricanes, those kind of things don't directly impact Wisconsin. And until 2007, 2008, I didn't think they affected us at all. But then we discovered that we could be a receiver state or a donor state. We could receive refugees. People who are evacuated from those areas did indeed come to Wisconsin for some temporary aid and housing following hurricanes. So we can no longer say hurricanes don't affect Wisconsin. They just don't do it directly. So communities need to understand what are the things that happen in your communities and to revise it annually. That's our problem, Hope. We're looking at our most current hazard and vulnerability assessment and thinking, well, cybersecurity and some of these other challenges that we never saw before are suddenly rising to the top. But we're also looking at flash flooding. Where was that before 2000? It almost didn't exist. All of the flooding preparedness programs, the readiness, the efforts to make sure communities are prepared for flooding had to do with the Mississippi River, what we call riverine flooding. Occasionally, some of the smaller rivers, the La Crosse River, the Black River certainly is notorious for flooding in some communities, but it was always riverine. Suddenly, we're getting a 12-inch, 15-inch rainfall overnight, and flash flooding became a new norm for the upper Midwest.
BJ, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, you know, maybe how Excel has been, changing the way it thinks about preparing for these sorts of weather emergencies, whether it's flooding or maybe it's ice storms, you know, tornadoes, other sorts of things. You know, Keith is talking a little bit about how those focuses have changed. I wonder what that looks like, you know, from Excel's perspective.
For Excel Energy, we've got a very detailed script that we try to follow for escalator operations. So it's not so much changing what we do as refining what we do. So we try to, for every escalator operation, we try to get better about what we do. So like I said, we've got a very detailed script that we try to follow for once the escalator operation begins, you know, how we start organizing crews, how we start organizing support staff.
Can you quickly clarify what an escalator operation is?
Sure. So an escalator operation for us is where we know that there's going to be a significant portion of our customers out of service, whether it be gas or electric, and it may be as much as 25%. I don't recall what the cutoff is for where we decide that it's an escalator operation, but basically that means we know we're going to need additional resources, or we're going to need all resources on call to come in and help us out. So escalated operations in our playbook, like I said, defines what we do during that whole incident and how we mobilize crews, how we arrange for simple things as far as their food and their lodging when we bring in crews from outside our own region. So like I said, it's more of a refinement of what we do on a regular basis during storms.
Melissa, I wonder if the American Red Cross has, been maybe responding to changing needs in the Wisconsin area for these sorts of events.
Well, the American Red Cross really, we do a lot of preparedness programming within our communities, and we're not so much more focused on one aspect of preparedness. You know, we really want the messaging to be out there. Like Keith had said, understanding the different types of events or situations that could happen within your community, how to personally prepare your family, making sure that you have, you're building a disaster kit, that you have 1 gallon per person per day of water, and then making sure, if you have prescription medications, that you have some extra supply of that. If you have changing in clothing, if we are having an ice storm event, the extra clothes you may need in that disaster supply kit is going to be very different than if we're dealing with flash flooding in the middle of summer. Making sure that you have extra pair of shoes, if you have an old pair of eyeglasses, canned goods, can opener, an emergency weather radio. And so these are the types of preparedness that we that we're doing with folks no matter what type of disaster. But part of that messaging is understanding, like Keith had said, what can affect you here in Wisconsin. Obviously it isn't going to be the hurricanes that are going to make a direct landfall. We can certainly be affected by them, as Keith had stated, but that may not be anything that we need to prepare for. But understanding that we could absolutely be hit by a large tornado, possibly an earthquake, flash flooding in general, these are all different things. And then fires. Fire preparedness, fire prevention is something that we're very heavily focused on in the American Red Cross. We have a home fire campaign going on across the country where we're actually going in and installing smoke detectors in people's homes. We're trying to save those lives. Fires are going to happen no matter what. Tornadoes are going to happen. Flooding is going to happen. It's all about understanding what can affect you and how to prepare your family for those. And the American Red Cross is very dedicated to making sure that folks are prepared.
That's Melissa Myers, Workforce Engagement Manager for the Wisconsin region of the American Red Cross, here with us today to continue our monthly series on infrastructure in light of severe weather emergencies. Also joining us is BJ Rockman from Xcel Energy in Eau Claire and Keith Butler, La Crosse County's Emergency Management Coordinator. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Melissa, it's my understanding that we also saw volunteers from the Wisconsin area, respond to some of the hurricanes that we've seen this summer. Can you talk a little bit about, what's the Wisconsin response been to these events?
Sure. American Red Cross volunteers, I'm so humbled to work for this organization and with the volunteers that we work with. They're just, they step up to the plate every single time, folks are in need. What I personally do for the American Red Cross is that I work directly with those volunteers to make sure that they're trained, to make sure that they're healthy enough to go, and then getting them to those disasters. And so we, as you mentioned, we have Harvey going on, we have Irma, and then we had Maria that just decimated the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, as well. And so right now, the Wisconsin region, the state of Wisconsin, has 246 responders that have left to go to Texas, have left to go to Florida, Louisiana. Now we have responders that are on the U.S. Virgin Islands, are in Puerto Rico, and that response is still ongoing. We're still heavily recruiting. We still had 1,400 people in shelters last night in Texas. We still had 800 people in shelters in Florida, and then we're continuing to see shelter numbers, growing in the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico as well. So, Wisconsin region is directly making an impact on providing that assistance. Our folks, like I said, are just remarkable. They're giving up 2 weeks of their lives when I'm asking them to go to a location. They're leaving their families and their lives behind to go provide the Red Cross mission for 2 weeks or longer. We've had some folks that have just gotten back from a 3 or 4 week deployment as well.
And so, what is that deployment look like typically? What's the kind of work that they're doing, and what are they, you know, what does that kind of look like?
Sure. Well, you know, we go back to that immediate response for the American Red Cross, is that we're there to, as folks are displaced from their homes, is that immediate response of sheltering, feeding, providing that shoulder to cry on. We have mental health and health services that are out there. So folks that had to immediately evacuate or leave everything behind if they lost all of their prescription medications, their medical devices, their anything like that. We have folks that are going down and specifically working with that. But, you know, our immediate response in Harvey and Irma has really been getting folks to those shelters where we're making sure that people have a safe place to sleep, that they have a blanket, they have clothes on their backs, they have food in their belly, they have someone to start talking to them. You know, it's the types of disasters that we're talking about, because we don't necessarily see them in Wisconsin, it's really hard to sometimes fathom these really, really large scale events that we have going on and just the numbers of people that are displaced. So, you know, the Red Cross volunteers have just been tremendous from the get-go.
BJ, I know that there's also been, you know, maybe some calls for help with restoring power, especially after Irma. You know, I wonder if Xcel has responded to these events, or if that's something that, you know, you've seen happen for other energy companies.
For Hurricane Irma, we did send from all of our operating companies, we sent 141 crew members and another 15 or 20 support people, so management type employees, to help lead those crews. From NSP, both Minnesota and Wisconsin, that number was, I think, 20 crew members from Minnesota, another 10 from Wisconsin with three support people. So we had a lot of people down in Florida, and most of them just got home on Sunday this past week after being down there for two weeks.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about, you know, why it was really needed for you know, people who work with electrical systems to go to Irma and respond to that situation?
Yeah, absolutely. So Xcel Energy belongs to a group called Edison Electric Institute. And EEI, they manage things like this. So where we have disasters, they manage getting all those resources to help put a system back together. And in this case, for Hurricane Irma, I think the estimate was there was 60,000 resources down there just helping put the electrical infrastructure back together for 8 million customers. So for us to be part of EEI and to help support something like that is, like Melissa said, it's humbling to see our guys go down there. But in turn, we expect that for disasters in this area, we would have people coming here to support us as well. So it's kind of a tit-for-tat type relationship, and it works very well.
BJ Rockman, Senior Director for Distribution Operations for Xcel Energy, is here with us today to talk about how communities, both in the Cooley region and across the U.S., respond to the impact of severe weather on roads, power lines, and other public infrastructure. Also joining us are Melissa Myers from the Wisconsin region of the American Red Cross and Keith Butler, Emergency Management Coordinator for La Crosse County. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on infrastructure and public needs during and after flooding and other severe weather emergencies. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're continuing our monthly series on infrastructure systems in our region. Flash flooding is a continued problem in western Wisconsin, often causing millions of dollars in damage to road and electrical infrastructure. Local groups have also been busy this summer responding to the greater devastation caused by Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria. Joining us to talk about how communities in the La Crosse area and beyond respond to the impacts of weather emergencies on public systems are Keith Butler, Emergency Management Coordinator for La Crosse County. BJ Rockman, Senior Director of Distribution Operations for Xcel Energy, and Melissa Myers, Workforce Engagement Manager for the Wisconsin Region of the American Red Cross. Before the break, BJ, you were talking about, how Xcel has sent, people to respond to some of the hurricanes we've seen already this summer. You know, I wonder also if there's potential that you might be sending people to Puerto Rico in light of the most recent Hurricane Maria. There has been talk that they'll be out of power for a long time. And I wonder if if there are any plans to send people there.
Right now, we don't have any plans, and if it would take place, it would be through our EEI membership. So, and I'm not sure if whatever public utility is part of EEI that covers Puerto Rico, if that's the case, and they are part of EEI and they make a call for additional resources, we certainly could be part of that mobilization. But for now, I haven't heard anything.
You know, in light of seeing so many people lose power in places like Puerto Rico and other places in the Gulf, is that a possibility for kind of the Coulee region that we would see that mass, devastation to the electrical system?
I think it's certainly possible. Like Melissa said, we saw an event this summer in Chautauqua where we had the tornado. For any devastating event like a tornado or an ice storm to go through this area, we certainly could lose power to a lot of people.
What kind of protections are maybe in place to kind of guard against those sorts of events? Or is there a way maybe to kind of protect against those sorts of emergencies?
Well, we have a system that has a lot of backups. So we're able to, in many cases, honor both our transmission and distribution system, feed from different directions. So if, for instance, we have damage in one area and no damage in another area, we can sometimes, change our system or flexible enough with the equipment that we've got to be able to feed a different direction. Now, if a particular area is damaged enough that we can't feed them from a different direction or we just can't get them power, then we have to isolate that area and we just have to go to work to get it restored.
One thing I definitely wanted to talk about in this conversation is the fact that, we've seen flooding events kind of affect some of the same areas more than once over the last, 10 or so years. A lot of the flooding, waterways that have flooded in the past continue to flood. And Keith, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, maybe how that affects the work of responding to these situations.
Well, certainly from an emergency management perspective, repetitive flooding has long been our top issue. We build along riverways. We build along the lakes in places that are beautiful and it's wonderful most of the time. But when a storm occurs, they're prone to damages. And we have to repair those damages, respond to those same places over and over again. We have to take a step back and say, wait a minute, maybe we need to redirect some of our energies here and not have that. So our emphasis in Wisconsin for maybe the last 10, 12 years has been property buyouts for homes, particularly residential properties that have been repetitively damaged by floods. After the third strike, say maybe we should consider moving you to some other place, turning that lot into a green space that never gets developed again, so it's never subject to that kind of flooding. And that has been our thinking, and that's probably very appropriate. It's not a widely used program, and it's certainly not forced. It's all voluntary. People have to agree to those circumstances. But flash flooding has changed our whole world. It's not just water coming up from streams, it's water coming down from the tops of the hills. And how do you repetitively manage that? Because it can strike you, not your neighbor. 10 years from now, you may be the recipient of that. And it's a different ballgame for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so how do you, plan for the future? How do you make sure that you're not rebuilding something that's going to get wiped out again,
Well, certainly zoning is a primary tool that communities can use. Many counties don't have a very comprehensive zoning program and see the effects of that. They want the freedoms and the liberties of not having encumbrances by over or excessive government regulation, but times of disaster, those things come into play. I'll give you a specific example in La Crosse County, a township called Barre, B-A-R-R-E. One particular subdivision was served by a pretty massive storm pipe, 8 foot in diameter. It was destroyed. It was bent up, thrown out of position by a storm that happened overnight in July. Nobody could foresee that would ever happen. This thing was massive. So do we need to reconsider? Maybe we need to do larger, maybe have a more improved stormwater structures, not have bridges that serve as dams. Maybe we need to tell designers and developers of subdivisions, you need to consider something much more substantial there, because there's that small possibility that someday you're going to wipe out an entire valley here with a horrible rainstorm. So we're certainly working in concert with land conservation, with a zoning office, with others who have much more information about how that works. But emergency management is one is with the raised eyebrows. What are we going to do? It seems like we need to do a lot better.
I wonder how often the costs of improving rather than rebuilding a certain piece of infrastructure maybe gets in the way.
It can. When we look at what we call mitigation projects, where we try to harden a community, try to make it so it's more resilient to a particular disaster, in most of the cases, it's flooding disasters that we're dealing with, the benefits far outweigh the cost. For every dollar spent on mitigation, you could save $3 or $4 in response and recovery costs. So we know it's a worthwhile program. It's just a hard sell to get entire communities to do massive programs or restructuring their downtown area. But we've seen success stories. We've seen Gay's Mills, Soldiers Groves relocate the entire downtown to a higher area. Wonderful, amazing project, extremely expensive, and it took a long time to accomplish that, but it has accomplished what they set out to do. They don't flood anymore because they're not there anymore. They're in a better place.
Melissa, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how repeated flooding events affecting the same areas, maybe changes the human needs of a situation and what those residents kind of need as far as resources or how they're affected.
Sure. Well, for the American Red Cross, it doesn't matter what community, it doesn't matter what type of disaster, it doesn't matter if that community has been struck by that same type of disaster before. The American Red Cross is there providing those basic essentials, those basic needs after that event has occurred. And so, Arcadia is a great example. When we saw flash flooding, help me out,
Keith. Just a couple of years ago, the whole entire downtown was underwater.
Right. And then, Arcadia then again, this last time was the flash flooding event was just horrific. I mean, people that had to immediately evacuate their homes to save their lives. Our response is no different other than we want to make sure that where we're housing people, if there were to be another rain event, that they're not then, in the same kind of line of fire with that. It's a lot harder to predict if, the tornadoes, obviously, and things like that. But flooding is a different kind of a beast all on its own. So, again, it doesn't matter what is affecting those communities. If those communities have been affected numerous times, we're there to respond to the people's needs. And if they need shelter, if they need food, if they need assistance, someone to talk to about those long-term recovery options, we're there for them. Now, maybe part of that long-term recovery option, we often partner with our government agencies, local communities, or community programs. Maybe part of that long-term recovery, if we're in that position someplace like Gay's Mills, if we're talking to Keith, and we have folks that do that, that are Red Cross representatives talking to people like Keith, if that's something that a government agency is working on, maybe that's part of long-term recovery. And not that that's going to happen overnight, but part of those conversations of pointing those folks in the right direction, getting them to the people that can help them with that long-term recovery. We're not the ones doing that, but we're getting them connected with other community agencies and government officials.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio and La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the impact of severe weather on public infrastructure and public needs. We're here with Melissa Myers, Workforce Engagement Manager for the Wisconsin region of the American Red Cross, BJ Rockman from Xcel Energy in Eau Claire, and Keith Butler, La Crosse County's Emergency Management Coordinator. We've heard In the last few years, many scientists say that these sorts of severe weather events are kind of becoming more common due to changing climate. And, you know, I wonder, Keith, from your perspective, if that is true, if we are going to see more severe weather events in the future, how that maybe changes your approach to these sorts of things and maybe what the county needs in the future.
Well, absolutely. It's a topic of discussion quite frequently in the emergency management community, and certainly with our partner agencies who can provide much of that data, that scientific knowledge that drives those kind of decisions. We've certainly have learned in the last 10 years that we need to be adaptive. Things are changing, and you can't use hard and fast rules. You need to be more flexible and understand what's different, what are we going to do about that, are we truly prepared? Do our responders have the training to manage that kind of disaster, or have we put our emphasis on something else that happens less frequently? So we're certainly aware of this, and we're watching this trend. We've only been monitoring weather for about 200 years. Prior to that, it was just more like incidental record keeping of what's going on in the world. So we don't have centuries of data to build upon, but we do know from what we have seen, there's ebbs and flows. Things do change over a period of time. Right now, we're on an upward tick. The intensity of rains is much greater. The frequency of the high volume rains is much greater than I've seen certainly in my lifetime. Will that change? Will that become worse? Or are we at the peak? Hopefully that's where we are, but no one can really know for certain. But that seems to be the trend right now, that they're going to be occurring for a while. High intensity rainfalls and happening more often.
BJ, in light of these weather trends that we're seeing, I wonder if Xcel has been doing any planning for the future in light of this.
I would say as far as the weather and the changes that we've seen, a lot of people would commit to those changes being because of carbon output around the country. And everybody knows that electric utilities contribute to that carbon output. Xcel Energy has taken a stance where we've eliminated or are eliminating a lot of our carbon footprint by getting rid of coal generation. So we're adding more and more wind generation throughout our service territory. Xcel Energy is the largest wind provider for generation throughout the country. So we're actually doing our part to try to lessen the impact that we have on the environment. As far as the changes in the weather and how it impacts how we do our work, we really haven't done a lot to plan for that because I don't know that it's really necessary.
The other thing I wanted to ask about with some of these larger transmission lines that have come through this area and been built in this area, a lot of that we've heard can help with the reliability of service and do that sort of thing. I wonder if that also maybe applies to this situation, if that, you know, makes the system more reliable in light of these events.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about before the way we harden our system by creating more flexibility by adding additional lines so we can transport power in different directions. So you've certainly seen the impact of that by some of the bigger transmission lines in your area. So that's part of our infrastructure build, not only on the transmission side but the distribution side. We're rebuilding our system on a regular basis.
Melissa, from the Red Cross's perspective, if we are seeing these changes in seeing more frequent kind of severe weather, I wonder what that means for your organization, especially, needing funding to help, provide these important resources for communities.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there's a couple different points to that of ways that we can prepare, especially if we see more severe weather events. You know, number one, we're always looking for Red Cross volunteers, folks that are willing to donate their time both locally and then willing to go on national events such as the hurricanes that we're seeing now. And so really encouraging folks, if they have that time to give, to go to redcross.org/volunteer and fill out a volunteer application, become a Red Cross volunteer. Certainly, the American Red Cross, we're funded by the donated dollar. So making a financial donation to help ensure that the Red Cross is there and that we're able to respond to all of these various events, whether it be locally or nationally, is definitely definitely something that that the Red Cross needs as well. And then third, something that may not be brought up or thought of during big types of events like this is blood donation as well. You know, we have to remember the nation's blood supply. In those effects, if you're thinking about all the folks affected by Harvey, by Irma, you know, those folks, there were thousands and thousands of people that were donating blood. Well, now they can't donate blood because they're you know, recovering from their own disaster. And so making sure that folks here in Wisconsin, something that they can do is go donate blood to, again, help make sure that our nation's blood supply is full and ready to go and provide to these different types, respond to these different types of disasters as well. So I think a mixture of all three of those things, you know, you can be a donor, donate financially, you can donate time, you can donate blood, you can do all three of those things, you can do one of those things, you know, but any one of those things are going to continue to make sure that the Red Cross is prepared, they're ready to respond in the nature of more or escalating type of weather events.
I wonder if, you know, in light of the fact that we are seeing more severe weather emergencies, Keith, I wonder what you can, if you can talk a little bit about, you know, maybe how individuals, how individual homeowners and businesses can prepare and maybe, you know, protect themselves against the damages that we can often see.
Well, that certainly is the platform that we like to present as often as we can. We are there to help you to the extent that we're able to do so, but individual readiness and preparedness at the family level, at the organization or business level, is actually far more effective. So we encourage people to have, as Liz was talking about, the home or your car jump kit, your go kit, in case of a situation that occurs. It's smarter to already have that gathered and readied than to try to do it just in time when the walls are falling down, when the rain's coming down, or the ice is knocking down the trees. So we're always an advocate for preparedness. That makes a lot more sense to us. We also understand that not everybody's going to be able to do that or do it fully. So we have to have responders. We have to have emergency capability. It's just that there's been a change, I think, in our society. The ease by which you just call 911 and suddenly somebody else takes care of your problem, I think we need to stop teaching that. People need to have some level of self-reliance. You need to be able to care for yourself. We're not always going to be able to provide one-on-one care for all of you. 120,000 people reside in La Crosse County. Another 10 to 20,000 people come in each day for school, health care, and other things. There's 10 officers on duty. There's 10 firefighters, you know, on duty. What's your expectation? I think people need to really crunch that and say, I need to be able to take care of myself to a certain extent until help can arrive.
Melissa, obviously the American Red Cross does a lot to try to teach people about preparedness. But, you know, what is your advice, you know, the really simple, basic things that people can do to better prepare for these sorts of events?
Right. And I think that exactly what Keith had said, you know, really taking that, having each family, each household, coming up with a kit that's based around the needs of that family and making sure that they're ready no matter what hits them. You know, even having a kit in your car, you know, we talk about that. We have winter weather approaching. You know, what if you're caught in the middle of a snowstorm? Part of that preparedness is making sure that you have some canned goods, some warm clothes, a blanket, you know, a weather radio, things like that, not only in your car, but in your home as well. And just making sure, again, I think, you know, we touched on this before, but making sure and understanding that not only yourself, but your family members, those that are close to you, that also have an understanding of what it is that can affect us. You know, not a whole lot of folks ever think of an earthquake striking Wisconsin, but it's a very real possibility. And so just taking that personal preparedness and making sure that you can feed yourself, that you have that water, if you can, that extra medication, extra pair of eyeglasses, extra clothing, that emergency radio, crank radios are a great thing to have. You know, if we're losing all of our power, they make wonderful weather radios out there right now that you can crank so you can charge your cell phones, you can hear the latest weather events. Those are really just important things that you can do to provide that protection. And if something big does happen, shelter in place possibly and be able to provide for your family so we're not overloading the 911 system, so we're not needing that immediate assistance that maybe someone greater may need that at that moment.
And BJ, just really quickly, you know, in the event of a long-term power outage, you know, what advice does Xcel have for people and, you know, what can they do to prepare?
So as far as we're concerned, we certainly don't need to encourage that people go out and buy their own generators, but we do have a lot of people that do. Certainly the more critical places, hospitals, some businesses have their own backup generation. As a customer, we just ask that you be patient. You can track your outages. We've got an application through Xcel Energy that you can report and track your outages and see what the estimated restoration time is. We also ask that you just stay safe. You stay clear of down lines because you never know whether they are energized or not. And know the emergency numbers to contact us to keep us informed where you do have an outage.
We've been talking with BJ Rockman, Senior Director of Distribution Operations for Xcel Energy, Keith Butler, Emergency Management Coordinator for La Crosse County, and Melissa Myers, Workforce Engagement Manager for the Wisconsin region of the American Red Cross, about local and national response to the impact of severe weather on roads, power lines, and other public needs. Today is a continuation of our monthly series on the state of regional infrastructure. Each month, we hope to explore challenges and issues facing a different public system in western Wisconsin. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.